submitted for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week is from the Project Life series, The Case for Caring. Mental health advocates such as Sarah Plummer Taylor hope to prove expanded programs strengthen companies' bottom lines. But first, the Biz section. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Luxury senior complex debuts. Hayes Barton Place sees high interest as it opens along Oberlin Road. The first residents have arrived at a five-story senior living complex in Raleigh that rises where the Country Club Homes apartments once stood at Fairview and Oberlin Roads. Hayes Barton Place welcomed its first residents in late December, and more are arriving as the Swank facility has the vibe of the first day of summer of camp. While residents won't get an ahoy there like the kids arriving at Camp Seagull, they will find a health center, a pickleball court, movie theater, and multiple restaurants, all geared toward seniors. For example, the bar at the SW Tavern is lower, so guests can sit in a normal chair, not risking tipping over with a higher chair. The main building includes 169 residences, with open kitchens, quartz countertops, and zero-entry showers. Monthly fees start at $6,615 per month for 800 square feet, and go all the way up to $18,350 for the largest offerings. Also on the way is a row of three-story homes called terraces that offer access to all the amenities, plus another 24 condo-style residences called the Flats at Bicton. Residency counselor Ann Janvier said the goal is to keep residents independent as long as possible, but for those who need more, coming soon is a wing for assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support. It's a major investment by Liberty Senior Living, a firm that dates to 1875 and grew out of the McNeil Pharmacy in Whiteville, which is still in business. Principal owners Sandy and Ron McNeil, the fourth generation to run the business, saw opportunities in the senior living space several decades ago. Liberty Senior Living has developed 14 properties, including the Templeton in Cary, has acquired five more, and has two under development, including one in Pittsburgh. Hayes Barton Place has 86% of its spaces spoken for, according to Janvier. About two-thirds of the residents are local, and many of those from outside the market are trailing children or grandchildren. There are 1,200 people on a priority partner list, which takes a $1,000 deposit, but many of those aren't quite ready to make the move, so some spaces are available. Despite appealing to an older demographic, the new locale has an energetic feel. One resident joked that she'd been so busy since moving in that we're going to have to take a vacation. Raleigh firm makes a big leap to Atlanta market. A Raleigh construction company known for building restaurants such as B. DeMonda Brewery, Bavana, Crawford & Son, and Whiskey Kitchen says a recent expansion to Atlanta is paying off. Over a year, Cooper Tassia General Contracting's office in Atlanta has connected it to more businesses throughout the Southeast. Recent contracts in those states amount to $85 million in revenue, the company said. Along with our thriving office in Raleigh, this expansion will open doors for us to continue to invest in the Southeast and fulfill our clients' construction needs, said John Cooper, Cooper Tassia's president and founder. Scott Starney is the Atlanta division manager. Goldsboro firm turns 100. An Eastern North Carolina group that is one of the largest construction contract companies in the Southeast is turning 100 this year. T.A. Loving Company of Goldsboro plans a year-long celebration with charitable initiatives, historical storytelling, and more. Our 100th anniversary is an opportunity to give back to the people and places that have shaped our journey, and we're excited to celebrate this legacy together, CEO Ty Edmondson said. Free parking program costs Raleigh big bucks. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And in downtown Raleigh, we're learning there's no such thing as free parking. That's the takeaway from a recent update on the city's efforts to get more people to come downtown. Late last year, the city launched a pilot program offering two-hour free parking at some of the city-owned garages downtown. Early results show positive results, with business owners saying the program is helping to boost their numbers. But the city says parking revenue dropped by a monthly average of $20,000. To offset the losses, Raleigh officials are considering multiple options, including extended hours for weekday paid parking or starting paid parking on weekends. And officials could even hike parking rates to make up the difference. NC State pauses hiring to watch impact of cuts. NC State University, one of the Triangle's major employers, is freezing hires as U.S. universities weigh the impact of the Trump administration's spending freezes and cuts. Warwick A. Arden, executive vice chancellor and provost, wrote in a memo February 14th that the NC State leadership is becoming increasingly concerned with our budgets over the next year or two. Arden announced a decision to pause hiring with exceptions on a case-by-case basis. NC State received more than $48 million in research funding from the National Institutes of Health in fiscal year 2024. But that's just a fraction of the hundreds of millions in federal research dollars the school receives each year. The university is one of the largest in the state, with more than 10,000 faculty and staff and an enrollment of 38,000. Turning now to the reporter pages, the first one is Transportation and Innovation, written by Lauren Onosorge. Her main story this week, local Shark Tank firm files for bankruptcy. A local startup that made a splash on the hit investor show Shark Tank with its vegan dog food has filed for bankruptcy reorganization. Wild Earth, which appeared on the ABC show before moving its headquarters from California to Durham in 2021, lists about $2.4 million in assets and $12.6 million in liabilities in the Chapter 11 filing. CEO Ryan Bethencourt, who owns about 9.2% of the company, said the firm just couldn't keep up with its venture debt, despite months of negotiations. The largest creditor, Espresso Capital, will soon own Wild Earth, which could then be sold as a going concern, he said. Bethencourt, who hopes to stay with Wild Earth, said the end result will be a leaner, meaner company. I don't think this is the end of the Wild Earth story, he said. The company is being represented by attorney Lori Biggs. We do not expect customers to see any disruption during this period, she said in an email. The company's creditors include nearly $259,000 owed to Animal Nutrition for trial production for kibble and nearly $319,000 to Barrett Pet Food Innovation for inventory supplies. They also include $110,000 owed to Triangle Tweener Fund, an early-stage investment group led by serial entrepreneur Scott Wingo. Wingo said the debt is a convertible note and was one of 18 investments his portfolio made to companies in third quarter 2023. We support entrepreneurs in the ups and downs, Wingo said. This is a risky business, and if failing isn't on the radar, you aren't pushing hard enough. Wild Earth made headlines both for its products, including a vegan cat food line it introduced last year, and its past backers. That includes people like Peter Thiel, who invested through Thiel Capital and Founders Fund. It also includes Mark Cuban, who invested after Wild Earth's Shark Tank appearance in 2019. Cuban's M Ventures Fund 2 LP is shown as owning about 0.5% of the company. Major energy project all about feeding Triangle's growth. This is in Knightdale. Duke Energy is constructing a massive battery storage facility in a fast-growing Raleigh suburb. Dubbed the Knightdale Battery Energy Storage System, it will someday provide 100 megawatts of electricity for a duration of 2 hours. That's a total of 200 megawatt hours. Construction on the facility, located at 5201 Knightdale Eagle Rock Road, has started with completion expected by the end of the year. The Duke Energy property is adjacent to an existing substation. According to Duke, the 11.3-acre project's purpose is to expand grid capacity and help meet rising energy needs resulting from the region's continued growth. The project is the first of its size on Duke's system, says a Duke spokesperson. The Knightdale Battery Storage Facility is one of many Triangle Area projects designed to enhance our grid's capacity and enable the region's continued economic growth, a spokesperson said in an email. Energy storage is one component of our future energy mix, which also includes nuclear, natural gas, hydroelectric power, and renewables. Lawmakers want to hike speed limits on interstates. A group of state lawmakers have filed a bill that would increase the maximum speed limit to 75 miles an hour on interstates in North Carolina. House Bill 112 would allow the North Carolina Department of Transportation to determine what interstate highways should see 75 mile per hour speeds based on an engineering and traffic study. Speed limits are now capped at 70 miles an hour in North Carolina, though drivers can legally travel as fast as 85 miles an hour elsewhere in the country. The bill doesn't specify what interstates would qualify for a higher speed limit, but it's likely wouldn't be Interstate 40 or I-540 in the Triangle. As the text states, highways allowing for 75 mile an hour traffic would need to be outside city limits or upon any part of a highway designated as part of the interstate highway system or any part of a controlled access highway. The bill would go into effect December 1st. An NCDOT spokesman said the department was not involved in the proposed legislation. Representative Alan Cheshire, a Nash County Republican, is listed as primary sponsor on the measure. Representatives Brian Biggs, a Republican from Randolph, Jared Lowry, Republican from Robeson, Wyatt Gable, Republican from Onslow, and Pricey Harrison, a Democrat from Guilford, are also listed as sponsors of the bill. None returned requests to discuss the bill, filed February 12th. Kaylee Thompson brings us the real estate and development section. Her main story, consulting firm doubles space. A life sciences consulting firm has doubled its office space in Durham with plans to grow its headcount by 20% this year. Illinois-based Big Owl Consulting moved to an office suite on the fourth floor of the 555 Mangum building downtown. The office is 5,100 square feet, more than double its previous space at the American Tobacco campus. Melissa McDevitt, Big Owl partner and leader of the Durham office, said the new space has enough room to accommodate 34 people. The firm's current headcount is 20. I think there was a period of time post-COVID where people were really wondering what the return to the workplace would look like and what would be ideal. We felt really strongly that we can deliver our best work by having some time spent together in office. Consulting can be a bit of a mentorship or apprenticeship type program, and we thought it was a worthwhile investment for us to continue to have sufficient office space, McDevitt said. The move comes after Big Owl ran out of room at its 2,400 square foot space at Diamond View 2. It needed more space for new employees and to expand its capabilities. McDevitt said the company is expanding its expertise across life sciences sectors. It offers support and consulting services too. Outfitted with various sized conference rooms, huddle rooms, phone booth rooms, and sit-to-stand desks, the new office allows for more collaboration and supports the firm's hybrid policy. 555 South Mangum Street is an 11-story building with 242,063 square feet of space. It features a fitness center with shower facilities, an outdoor courtyard, rooftop sky deck with bar, amenity lounge, and conference center. The Class A building is 78% leased, according to JLL. The building was built in 2020. Big Owl had been in the American Tobacco campus since 2017. Plans for a 20-story tower is scaled back. Plans for a 20-story development in downtown Raleigh appear to have changed amid the tight financial market squeezing commercial real estate. Dominion Realty Partners of Raleigh has submitted site plans for the first phase of its Salisbury Square project across from the Martin Marietta Center for the Performing Arts. The plans show Tower 1 will be a 7-story residential building. The residential mid-rise tower will have 545 units with an average size of 856 square feet per unit. There will be 374 studios and one-bedroom units and 171 two-bedroom units. The property is zoned for up to 20 stories. Originally, Dominion Realty planned a 20-story mixed-use tower with 304 apartments, office, and retail space for Phase 1. The development was also going to be the new headquarters for Dogwood State Bank. Dominion Realty did not immediately return a request for comment. In an email, Dogwood CEO Steve Jones said, The scope of the project has pivoted, and we're on standby to see where we stand. Plans for Salisbury Square have evolved since the project was first proposed in early 2020. But the office market is struggling to make a real comeback as most developers sit on the sidelines due to the high cost of financing and constructing projects. Boston firm scoops up RTP Apartments. An apartment complex on the eastern edge of Research Triangle Park recently sold for more than $60 million. Boston Capital Real Estate Partners acquired the 200 East apartments for $61.59 million, according to Durham County deed records. The apartments are near the interchange for Interstate 40 and Miami Boulevard. The seller of 200 East, American Landmark, bought the apartments in 2018 as part of a two-property acquisition totaling $98.75 million. Boston Capital, which is headquartered in Boston, renamed the apartment community to Aventura RTP to line up with the branding of their portfolio. Retail center in Cary primed for redevelopment. A well-known and popular retail center in downtown Cary is about to be remade. The Ashworth Village on West Chatham Street is going to become a mixed-use building with multifamily units and ground floor retail. The Ashworth family, along with Chatham Street Commercial and North Woods Associates, both of which are in the Jordan family, are partnering to develop the mixed-use project. The project will have 22 residential units and 6,624 square feet of restaurant and retail space in a three-story building. The building at 200 South Academy Street with Academy Street Bistro will not be demolished. It will be part of the new development, and Academy Street Bistro will remain. The narrow retail building at 115 West Chatham Street will be demolished. There will be dedicated on-site parking for residents of the new building and a streetscape upgrade along Chatham Street. The project will be a connector between the Academy Street building and the Jordan Meridian Cary building under construction at the corner of Chatham Street and Harrison Avenue. Kate Tracy is here with the retail and restaurant section. 60 Vines coming to North Hills. After opening in Charlotte a year and a half ago, a Dallas-based restaurant and wine bar is ready to pop the cork in Raleigh. 60 Vines, a vineyard-inspired restaurant with locations throughout the South, plans to open in late 2025 at 4000 Center at North Hills in a two-story space. The brand is taking over a suite that La Monte Grill originally planned to occupy, a 60 Vines spokesperson confirmed. The restaurant suite is part of Kane Realty's new office building, 1 North Hills in the Main District, which has attracted a number of office tenants. Once open, it will be near the RH Gallery and its rooftop restaurant. Jeff Carcara, CEO of 60 Vines, said in an email that the restaurant has been keeping an eye on the North Hills area for a while. It's one of the best curated centers in the Southeast, and we're confident it will be a great fit for our brand, he said. We're excited to bring 60 Vines wine country experience to Raleigh and create a place where guests can relax, discover new wines, and enjoy great food. 60 Vines serves brunch, lunch, and dinner. In addition to its extensive selection of wine on tap, the drink menu features cocktails, mocktails, and non-alcoholic wines. Its food menu includes charcuterie boards, appetizers, salads, pizza, pasta, main entrees, sandwiches, and more. 60 Vines North Hills Restaurant will feature outdoor patios on both the first and second floors, as well as a bar on each floor with operable windows to create indoor or outdoor bar areas, per plans filed with the City of Raleigh. The restaurant will also have an elevator. 60 Vines opened in Charlotte in August 2023 with 60 wines on tap. In addition to Charlotte, the brand lists 13 locations in Texas, Florida, Washington, D.C., Tennessee, and Virginia. In downtown, the Green Monkey gift shop to close in Raleigh. After 12 years in business, the Green Monkey is closing its storefront in downtown Raleigh at 215 South Wilmington Street. The gift shop and bar's last day will be March 15th, but the owners plan to keep certain parts of the business alive. While our physical shop is closing, we're here and working on moving our operations online, the owner said in an email to customers. Rusty Sutton, founder and CEO, declined to comment on the closure. He and his husband, Drew Temple, opened the Green Monkey's brick-and-mortar store in 2013. Although the business had a presence at the Raleigh Flea Market starting in 2007, The Green Monkey moved from the storefront at 1217 Hillsborough Street to its Wilmington Street location in 2023. In High Park Village, restaurant to open in shuttered Taste Space. A retail center in Raleigh is going through a restaurant transition. Taste, small plates and wine bar, closed last month at 1912 Bernard Street in the High Park Village Retail Center off East Whitaker Mill Road, just east of the Five Points neighborhood. In its place, a wine bar called Stellar is opening soon and currently has signage up. Plans filed with the City of Raleigh show that Mandy Tamplin and Daniel Willis are the applicants for the venue and will be doing updates to the property. Tamplin plans to open the restaurant in mid-March. In addition to wine, Stellar will also offer cocktails and a menu featuring small plates and steak, pasta, or seafood dishes every week. Stellar will also host live music events. Tamplin, who moved back to Raleigh a year ago after closing her wine bar in Virginia, plans to hire between 6 to 8 employees to help run the new restaurant. In Durham, acclaimed chef to open restaurant and rooftop bar. Oscar Diaz is bullish on the Bull City. The James Beard-nominated chef, known for the Little Bull Restaurant and Octun Coffee and Bar, along with his partners at Mezcalito Group, are opening 2 restaurants in Durham this year in addition to another one in Clayton. Last month, Diaz and his partner signed a lease for a century-old building at 301 East Chapel Hill Street. Diaz and Mezcalito will operate a yet-to-be-named restaurant and rooftop bar on the main and second floors, while the basement level will feature a lounge. Diaz plans to open the venue by the end of the year. The restaurant will feature live fire cooking and a large wooden grill inside. He said the cuisine will most likely be Latin American-driven, but was sparse on details beyond the live fire cooking aspect. Everything is going to be kissed by fire in that place, he said. In March, Diaz is opening a taqueria called Tataco at 620 Foster Street in the Gearhouse Apartments. The restaurant will have a tortilla-making station as well as a fish station with fresh seafood displayed on ice. The Mezcalito Group has Mezcalito restaurants in Apex, Goldsboro, Durham, Clayton, and Beaufort, and has signed a lease in Rollsville, Cobblestone Village. Turning now to healthcare and life sciences, brought to us by Zach Ezone. Triangle Hospitals approved for expansion. Healthcare systems in the Triangle have secured approvals to expand existing facilities in Wake County. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services approved proposals from Duke Health, UNC Health, and Wake Med, while also denying other proposed projects. The regulator also denied a proposal from Novant Health to grow its presence in the Triangle with a new hospital. DHHS approved Wake Med's proposals to add 21 acute care beds to its main campus in Raleigh and another 24 beds to the health system's Carey Hospital. However, DHHS denied a separate application to add another 25 beds to Wake Med North Hospital. DHHS also approved Wake Med's proposal to add 2 operating rooms to its main campus in Raleigh, while denying another proposal to develop 2 operating rooms at Wake Med North Hospital. UNC Health was approved to expand its UNC Rex Hospital in Raleigh by adding another 20 beds, plus 2 additional operating rooms at a capital expenditure of $16.5 million. The health systems lost out on a larger proposal to develop a new 50-bed hospital in Wake Forest. Duke Health received approval to add 5 acute care beds to its Raleigh Hospital at an approved cost of $15.25 million, short of the 41 acute care beds the health system proposed. Additionally, DHHS denied Duke's proposal to add 3 operating rooms to the facility. The state regulator also denied Duke's proposals to add 17 beds to its already approved but not yet developed hospital in Cary. DHHS also denied the health system's proposal to develop a new Duke Cancer Hospital, which was pitched as a facility with no more than 12 acute care beds and 1 operating room. DHHS denied Novant's program to develop a new hospital in Wake County. The health system has major operations throughout most of North Carolina, except for the Triangle, aside from a few physicians' offices. Novant had proposed developing a 36-bed facility in Knightdale. Healthcare organizations can appeal DHHS decisions. RTI lays off 226 amid freeze on foreign aid. RTI International, the Triangle's largest nonprofit organization with thousands of employees, is temporarily cutting hundreds of workers amid the Trump administration's freeze on foreign aid. RTI, based in Research Triangle Park, said recently that it's laying off 226 employees in the U.S., including 61 people in North Carolina, amid the funding freeze. The decision comes as the Trump administration tries to restructure the U.S. Agency for International Development, that's USAID, which extends assistance to countries around the world by contracting with organizations such as RTI. The temporary layoffs impact a small fraction of RTI's workforce, which as of last year totaled 6,038 employees, with 945 based in the Triangle. RTI says it does not know how long the staffing changes will remain in effect. The organization says it works on 4,000 projects for more than 1,100 clients annually. RTI provides research, technical, and development expertise to governments, businesses, and other organizations. The projects our international development staff implement provide essential contributions that support America's leadership in creating a more prosperous, safe, secure, and resilient world, said Tim Gable, RTI's president and CEO. NC Biotech weighs demand as treatment hits market. After a long wait, a Durham biotechnology company is preparing for its first commercial launch. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration in December approved Humacyte's product to treat vascular trauma patients. Humacyte plans to begin selling its Symvess product this month. Symvess is a vascular conduit made from bioengineered human tissue that can help patients who have suffered serious injuries, like from a gunshot or a car accident. Humacyte makes the product at its 83,000 square foot manufacturing facility in Durham. The conduits have a shelf life of a year and a half, and the company estimates it already has produced enough to support its first several months of commercial launch, said CEO Laura Nicholson. We've got about 6 or 8 months of product on the shelf right now, and we're also ramping up our production, trying to get a sense of what we think demand is going to be later in the year, Nicholson said. Trying to anticipate demand is difficult. It's the first major advancement in blood vessel treatment in decades, Nicholson said. Humacyte has priced the product at $29,500 per unit. Our cover story this week is from the Project Life series, The Mental Wellness Test, and the author of this article is Connie Gentry. Companies are seeking ROI on mental health benefits as programs expand. The right thing to do for your people may also be the right decision for your profitability. That's what advocates of expanded mental health benefits hope to prove. A survey of more than 500 human resources professionals found the vast majority, 87%, believe that demonstrating the return on investment of mental health care is critical. However, more than a third of those surveyed also have trouble believing the ROI claimed by their mental health vendors, according to the annual Workforce Mental Health Trends Forecast, published by Lyra Health, a provider of mental health benefits that serves more than 20 million people. HR professionals said tracking their firm's recruitment metrics, as well as an employee retention, productivity, and absenteeism are among the key measurements that can be indicators of ROI. Notably, employers with comprehensive mental health benefits are 17% more likely to experience increased employee engagement and 13% more likely to report higher employee productivity, according to the 2025 forecast. The most critical data to monitor, according to many of the benefits leaders surveyed, are costs versus savings in the organization's health claims. With or without quantifiable evidence on the books, businesses that believe in the value of mental health are expanding their benefits packages and taking resources and healthcare to the next level. In today's competitive job market, investing in mental and emotional well-being resources is not just a benefit, it's a strategic imperative, said Patrick Chanad, Jr., principal of well-being at Edward Jones, adding that by prioritizing associates' mental health, a company will foster resilience, creativity, and loyalty. Offering robust mental health support enhances associate engagement and significantly reduces turnover, turning workplaces into nurturing communities where individuals feel valued, respected, and empowered to contribute their best, he said. 2 years ago, while their organization and associates were still dealing with post-pandemic issues like isolation and burnout, Edward Jones established a well-being center of excellence and embarked on a multi-year endeavor to improve the health outcomes and workforce experience of its teams. Starting with mental and emotional well-being resources, we identified providers that could better meet the needs of our associates and their families, Chanod said. The company launched an enhanced employee assistance program, which began solving critical gaps like prevention, access, service, and reporting, he said. Our associates and their families deserve more than just the basics. Investing in an enhanced EAP was the next logical step. Employees also benefit from workplace cultures that are open and transparent, where historical stigmas associated with mental illness no longer exist. To that end, mental health has become a common topic of conversation within company settings. That's certainly true at DPR Construction, which was recognized in 2024 by Newsweek as one of America's greatest workplaces for mental well-being. I've been a firsthand witness to that conversation at all levels of the company, in private conversations and in project teams, said Sarah Plummer Taylor, DPR's talent advocate for the Southeast region. She recalls one example during a suicide awareness event when one of the company's superintendents shared his story of feeling challenged in that regard and how his candor opened the door for others to express their feelings. There are lots of examples across the company where conversations are encouraged, received with empathy, and folks are supported as they share personal or family and friend examples of what they're bringing to work with them. It's that whole person model that DPR supports, Taylor said. Likewise, a key component of Edward Jones' strategy is a communication and education with a focus on holistic well-being. At the company's signature events, both senior leaders and associates speak openly and honestly about their personal struggles. We take dark topics like anxiety, depression, and suicide awareness and prevention out of the shadows and disempower them on stage through brave storytelling, while also shining a great big spotlight on all the resources available to associates and their families. Senior leaders sharing their journeys display the dichotomy of leadership. It says, you can have trust and confidence in me as your leader, but I do not have all this figured out, and I struggle just like you. This creates a culture of being okay and not to be okay. An overarching culture of support and bring your whole self to work is what ultimately attracted Taylor to DPR. A U.S. Marine veteran who deployed twice to Iraq, she is also the author of two books about mental wellness and resiliency, Just Roll With It, Seven Battle-Tested Truths for Building a Resilient Life, and Stopping Military Suicides, Veteran Voices to Help Prevent Deaths. Taylor was initially reluctant to join a corporate construction company because of the parallels of rigid hierarchies that she saw between military culture and other construction companies. DPR has proved to be the antithesis of that rigidity, she says, adding that she typically finds herself working with her employer's leaders, teaching them not only how to build resiliency for themselves, but also how to share it with others. It's great to work at a company where a consistent core value is for folks to mentor others, where if someone is nearing burnout and needs a break, they can use PTO or take a sabbatical, she said. After 5 years at DPR, every employee is entitled to take 3 consecutive weeks of sabbatical leave, and the benefits package reflects that taking care of people is the top priority at DPR. The company provides lunch and learn workshops to improve employee well-being, with meals catered and topics ranging from sleep health to resiliency to chair yoga. All employees have free access to confidential professional counseling, flexibility for time off, and a host of wellness benefits that are both preventive and proactive. It's like the outreach Janelle Escobar received after the birth of her third child. My maternity leave was completely paid for by DPR for this baby, and you can imagine how having that covered really helped my mental health, said Escobar, who leads communications and brand management at DPR. During her first two pregnancies, Escobar worked in corporate communications management at FedEx Corp and then at Cracker Barrel, neither of which had benefits that compared with DPR, which also offered her and her husband parental coaching classes. I had never been offered parental coaching, and when I got a call about it, I told my husband, "We might have already screwed up two kids, but let's do it," she said. What Escobar really liked is that she didn't have to look for a coach. It was all arranged for her. Similarly, the advanced EAP at Edward Jones is free for all employees, including part-time associates, their spouse, partner, and up to five dependents, whether they are on the Edward Jones medical insurance or not. Eight virtual or in-person therapy sessions are included per mental health issue per year, and over 50,000 in-network providers are available in the plan. We hold our vendors accountable to a lightning-fast 2.2 days to provide care, Chanad said, and our enhanced EAP provided us with a clear focus on prevention, including 2,000-plus hours of meditation and mindfulness content and unlimited text-based chat available at more than 1,500 certified mental health coaches. Through the EAP, employees also have access to traditional work-life services, such as referrals for legal and financial services or child and elder care, and resources are available to support the well-being of children and teenagers. In the survey for LIRA's 2025 forecast, financial stress surfaced as the leading factor impacting workforce mental health. Job insecurity and economic fears have escalated since that survey was conducted in September. Forbes reported early this year that more than 152,000 jobs were cut in quarter four of 2024, a significant 30% increase over the last quarter of 2023, and hundreds of layoffs and furloughs are announced almost daily as a result of frozen federal budgets. Uncertainty abounds. Mark Simon, executive director of NAMI, that's N-A-M-I, Wake County, which is the local affiliate of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, was working with a large business to engage with the company's employee resource groups when unexpectedly the company announced layoffs. "We had to pause the original initiative and quickly pull together resources for employees navigating the stress of layoffs," he said. "That's something NAMI is equipped to do, and Simon's recommendation for stressful times is be proactive in naming this, acknowledge that this uncertainty exists, and validating employee concerns can be helpful. It can feel overwhelming for company leaders as well as their associates, but to create a sense of psychological safety, he suggests providing as much transparency as possible. Sometimes that's tough to do, but anything you can do to address some of the uncertainty, even though you may not have all the answers, can help build trust," Simon said. If there's an opportunity to host open dialogue, he encourages doing so, whether it's a town hall meeting with upper management or check-ins from individual managers with their direct reports. Creating a feedback channel can be helpful. Ultimately, Simon's advice is to lead with compassion and give as much notice as possible for any changes that may happen. As needs for mental health care grow, one in three HR professionals said providing support for parents and caregivers is their top well-being priority for 2025. Looking ahead, the LIRA 2025 forecast reports 83% of HR professionals believe artificial intelligence could be the answer. AI is expected to play a big role in improving and shaping mental health care in the coming year, helping facilitate more accessible, effective, and sustainable options for organizations and their employees. About Project Life. Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace, and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of the fight for better health in our workplaces. This week's executive voice feature is about Tom White. He's a home builder whose company is called Axiom Holdings. Ben Tobin wrote this article. Leaning into his Eastern North Carolina roots is essential for Tom White's work. As principal with Axiom Holdings, LLC, and focusing on residential development, sometimes he has to work through skepticism from small municipalities, elected officials, and residents due to his office being in Raleigh. But sharing his backstory has helped establish connections, he said. "We had challenging zoning in Rocky Mount, and there were a lot of preconceived notions just because they saw that my office address was Raleigh," White said. Then once I got to talking to the different council members and let them know some of my family has lived in Nash County for over 20 years and that we have good intentions to see healthy growth in Nash County, that really changed their demeanor toward the project once they knew a little bit more. White, who's a native of Archer Lodge in Johnston County, currently has roughly 4,000 lots under development, with projects ranging from Person County to Nash County. What inspired you to get into residential development, the TBGA asked. First off, it was just to make a living. Growing up in rural Johnston County, I saw how the landscape was continually changing. At first, I had a hard time with it because we were losing so much farmland, but then after a while, I figured I would join in and get into the residential development. And one of the greatest joys I get doing it in these rural counties is seeing how with small towns that can be struggling, we're able to increase the population and increase the tax revenue. For example, in Spring Hope, when I first started out there, the police chief at a council meeting deferred his raise so his officers, because there wasn't enough money for him and his officers to get a raise. And since then, he built well over 100 homes. We built well over 100 homes in that area. And now the police department has three new officers, new cars, and the cops are actually making a living wage. That's a really cool thing, seeing good people get good quality jobs through the tax revenue that we're able to do in some of these rural towns. How do you balance keeping current residents happy while providing this growth? That's a challenge in every town. A lot of these towns, they want the restaurants and they want the conveniences of what comes with the growth, but a lot of them don't like the traffic that comes with growth. Everybody complains about the traffic. But obviously, to bring businesses in that people enjoy, obviously there's a traffic because you have to have the rooftops to bring in the businesses. I think a lot of developers don't communicate very well, so that's one of the biggest things for me. We want a product that people are going to be happy to call home. We're not coming in to destroy their town. What is your main focus with homes? My main focus is single-family attached and detached. With the single-family attached, it's a good entry-level product for a young family to get into, and then maybe a more established home like single-family detached a little bit further down the road. I've just seen a lot more of that growth, so I feel like as I've grown up in the area and seeing that growth around Raleigh, I know that market. With multifamily, I'm not that familiar with how the numbers that make that market work. What's the biggest challenge with development now? Obviously, water and sewer are a huge challenge in many towns. It's almost like as soon as you think you have something figured out, you realize that you don't know anything. And it's always just constantly learning. Like a project we did in Middlesex, we've had a ton of problems with that one because of the water filtration. I'd just say there's unique challenges on each one of these projects. What areas are you bullish on for the next 3 to 5 years? I'm starting to look a little bit more down east. We recently tied up a property in Wilson, and Wilson has obviously had some growth, but I think Wilson is going to grow a lot faster in the next couple of years. The Triangle Business Journal has a podcast called North Carolina Business Minds. The business journals of the Triad, Triangle, and Charlotte have launched a podcast series to give you access to key leaders across the state and to equip you with business intelligence about the latest news and top trends in North Carolina. If you'd like to listen to that podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And from the podcast this week, the TBJ spoke to UNC Chancellor's Lee Roberts. He weighs key changes in Chapel Hill. Dane Huffman conducted this interview. From Charlotte to Raleigh and across the state, we're bringing you access to key business leaders and the top trends with our North Carolina Business Minds podcast. Dane Huffman asked Chancellor Roberts, how can UNC help revive Franklin Street? Mr. Roberts said, we really want to work together to make sure that Chapel Hill generally and Franklin Street in particular are as vibrant as possible, which is obviously in everyone's interest. In particular, around Porthole Alley, the university actually owns the frontage on both sides of Porthole Alley there, and what we'd like to do is expand the Ackland Art Museum, giving them much-needed additional exhibition space while creating an entrance to the museum on Franklin Street, which will be great for the Ackland, great for the university, and great for Franklin Street and the town of Chapel Hill. TBJ asked, why is football critical? Football drives the bus. North Carolina makes more money from basketball than most schools do, really more than almost any other school does. So men's basketball remains very important as a revenue driver for us, as well as all of our legacy and tradition. We don't have a more important sport here, of course, than basketball, but when you look at the growth of viewership and the concomitant growth in revenue, football is really in the driver's seat. TBJ asked, how are you weighing the Smith Center's future? As we come up on some really significant capital investment for the Smith Center, you have to ask the question of whether this is the right long-term home if you look out the next 50 years for a basketball program. If we were to move the basketball arena to a location away from the central core of campus, we wouldn't put it in the middle of surface parking lots with nothing else around. It would be part of a broader mixed-use development program. And if you look out over the next 50 years, one eternal principle of real estate is that hospitals only grow up and they always need more land. And if you think about the proximity of our hospital to the Smith Center and you think about taking a long-term perspective, that's an important factor to be considered. Huffman asked, what about off-campus? Robert said, in addition to the Friday Center is the old airport site in Carolina North. Half of our students live off-campus, and a lot of them live up MLK, which is Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, toward that location, and it's only 1.6 miles from that intersection to Columbia and Franklin Streets. It's 1.3 miles from Columbia and Franklin to the Smith Center. The distances are broadly similar, or maybe more similar than people might realize. Tell us about your approach to AI. It's arguably the most important technological development of our careers. We're a leading global research university. We have a responsibility to develop a really robust strategy around AI research. We have a large, complex, decentralized organization, and AI should, at least on paper, help our enterprise run more effectively and more efficiently. We've got time. I'll go back now and finish up the reporter pages, and the last one that we didn't get to before is Dane Huffman's On the Coast. Kinston Shop grows as T-shirts boom. An iconic Eastern North Carolina sports shop, widely known for its T-shirts, is looking to expand. The Noose Sports Shop, a popular stop for beachgoers on Highway 70 in Kinston, first opened in 1953. About 35 years ago, current owner Russell Rose was speaking with a T-shirt vendor from Virginia who struggled to keep his workers occupied in the winter off-season. He said, I can't keep my good employees working during the downtime of the year, during the dead of winter, Rhodes said. Rhodes suggested buying T-shirts in the winter at a lower rate. After buying the T-shirts at a discount, he then sold them for $5 as a marketing ploy. I sold the shirts at just about my cost, but I was getting my logo on as many people as I could throughout East North Carolina, Rhodes said. It put our name in the public conversation. Some of the high schools in Raleigh, that's what some of the young people ask for on their Christmas list. We've created a brand that people like. It's sort of a cult following, a cult brand. Rhodes said the 75,000-square-foot new sports shop has four primary revenue streams, fishing tackle, apparel, hunting goods, and fast-growing home decor. Rhodes, who has worked at New Sports Shop for 40 years and bought the business in 2021, sees opportunities to grow after the success of a second store that opened in Cedar Point in 2018. We're actively looking for a site now, Rhodes said. We're looking at the southern coastal area. After that, he said, could be a lot more stores in North Carolina and then expansion into nearby states. Those are big plans for a shop that started small and made a big name for itself with the T-shirt. In Brunswick County, developer grabs land near two megasites. Triangle developer Ray Covington is looking to build a new neighborhood in fast-growing Brunswick County. Covington Collaborative purchased more than 90 acres in the small town of Northwest for more than $3 million on January 13th, according to Brunswick County deed records. Covington had purchased an adjacent 2.4-acre tract for $100,000 in September 2023. Covington said he liked the proximity to Leland as well as the closeness to the county's two megasites. In Carteret County, waterfront property lists for $24 million. A huge plot of land 26 miles north of Moorhead City is on the market for $24 million or $3,211 per acre. There's not another property like it that I know of in the county, and I don't know that you could reasonably recreate it even if you wanted to. Charlie Morgan, one of the listing agents for Whitetail Properties Real Estate. The owner is Lucan's Island Timber Enterprise, an LLC formed in 1996 that lists more than a dozen members. The listing says it includes 10 miles of pristine waterfront along the South River. At Wrightsville Beach, Beloved Beach Hotel debuts Swank Overhaul. A well-known hotel on Wrightsville Beach is back open with a new name and a new look. The Blockade Runner Beach Resort is now the Trailborn Surf and Sound after its new owners did a major revamp of the well-known property. Lawrence Lewis Jr. opened the 151-room Blockade Runner in 1964 and sold it to Joseph Baggett in 1971. The Baggett family sold it to Castle Peak Holdings of New York City in 2022. The Blockade Runner isn't the oldest hotel in North Carolina by any means. The Pinehurst Resort dates to 1895, and Asheville's Grove Park Inn dates to 1913, for example. But it's been a favorite of North Carolina families for decades, with its 3.5 acres featuring the Banks Channel on one side and the Atlantic Ocean on the other. The original name was a nod to Wilmington Civil War history when the town was a key port for Confederate blockade runners. Castle Peak Holdings announced in September that the hotel would undergo a renovation and rebrand as Trailborn Surf and Sound. This is Trailborn's fourth hotel and first beachfront resort property. The renovations include easier access to the beach, an updated and improved pool bar, and an expanded restaurant. The restaurant La Duna Paradiso will feature an Italian and seafood dishes and is expected to open this spring. Room prices in May begin at $272 per night and rise from there, peaking at $408 on Memorial Day weekend. In economic development, jobs pipeline shifts away from automotive. This article by Lauren Onosorge. A year ago, one in every 6 or 7 economic development projects to hit the desk of Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, was automotive in some capacity, whether it was an electric vehicle maker or a manufacturer of EV batteries. Now the ratio has shrunk to 1 in 20. Activity is still solid, Chung said of the state's economic development pipeline, which stood at 221 active projects at the beginning of February, but the sector mix is different in 2025. Were North Carolina to win all of those projects, it could mean 66,000 jobs and $49 billion in investment, according to EDPNC. In Wake County, Economic Development Director Michael Haley says his team is seeing a healthy mix of projects. Haley said the pipeline in Wake remains strong at 41 active projects. Were the Raleigh region to win all of them, that would mean 11,000 jobs and $6.7 billion in capital investment. There are factors at play that could impact economic development in 2025, especially tariffs. During the first Trump administration, we definitely saw an uptick in companies that were exploring U.S. production so they could continue to access the U.S. market, Chung said. I suspect we'll see the same, if not more, of that this go-around. Overall, 37% of the state's current prospects are coming from foreign countries. Energy projects make up 17% of the pipeline, according to EDPNC. That's followed by chemicals, plastics at 11%, food and beverage and agribusiness at 10%, and life sciences at 9%. In Wake County, advanced manufacturing amounts to about 35% of total projects, with office-related and life sciences companies each making up 20%, Haley said. Glenwood South Restaurant to close. A popular restaurant in Raleigh's Glenwood South neighborhood is preparing to turn off the lights, but the space isn't going completely dark. The Cortez Restaurant, known for its oysters and cocktails, announced February 18th its last day of business will be March 2nd, ending a nearly 8-year run. The restaurant, which has hosted acclaimed chefs such as past James Beard nominee Oscar Diaz, opened in 2017 in the space formerly held by Cafe Helios Coffee Shop. Brothers Charlie and Hector Ibarra, owners of Jose and Sons, launched Cortez. We are humbled by the support we have received throughout this experience during this time in Glenwood South, the restaurant posted on Instagram. Raleigh is quickly evolving, and we have made a decision to evolve as well in this space. The Post said the space at 413 Glenwood Avenue will be remodeled and a new restaurant will open in April, with more details to be released later. The Cortez closure continues the restaurant shakeup in downtown. The Brass Tap recently opened at 400 H building on Hillsborough Street, and multiple food and beverage concepts have joined the Smoky Hollow lineup. In Midtown Raleigh, upscale Raleigh restaurant blends old and new. Watts and Ward's Patrick Shanahan and Vidrio chef Saif Rahman are making headway on their fine dining restaurant at the Exchange Raleigh as they aim for a spring opening. Renderings of the restaurant called Peregrine reveal a blend of ancient and modern design at the 4,000-square-foot space in the 1,000 Social building. The restaurant will be the flagship venue at the Exchange, part of DeWitt Carolina's 40-acre billion-dollar development in Midtown. Peregrine hired Maurer Architecture as the architect for the restaurant. The restaurant will have seating for 100 guests. The venue will feature three grand arches, a floor-to-ceiling glass curtain, and Roman clay walls that Shanahan is plastering himself. I taught myself these techniques while renovating my own home and found there's a beauty to the imperfect nature of plaster. I fell in love with the look as well as the process, he said in a release. The restaurant is using natural and modern materials in its build-out, including terracotta, walnut, teak, stone, black accents, and steel curtains. The restaurant is sourcing its lighting from ceramics brand Virginia Sin and a paper chandelier designed by Igno Maurer. Future guests will enjoy a cocktail bar facing the open kitchen that seats 10 people. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.